So she takes the hot milk off Vihavan. Remember, that's all she did. She just put Krishna down. And then obviously when the milk's boiling over, you don't just like take your time, you run. She ran over there. She used some kitchen cloths and to take the pot down and came back. And in the meantime, Krishna had broken the pot, gone to her love Almira, collected the key, and in the midst of all this, he's smearing yogurt everywhere, floor, walls, and he's getting very intoxicated with his rascaldom, Srila Prabhupada would call it. And then he goes to the storehouse, because if you've already been bad and you're going to get it for something, you may as well get the most out of it before you get caught. And so he goes to the storeroom, and in the storeroom he piles up things. Things are hanging from the top. There are other things there. The spices are in big containers, and there's grains and so many other things. Of course, Nandamaraj has many storerooms. The main storerooms are elsewhere. Koshi is one place where he has storeroom, and his warehouse, his granary. And he has granary in different parts of Vrindavan. But here, for actively interacting with the kitchen, Samantha Jashoda has her storage. And she also obviously keeps all of the milk products and so many other things that then are meant to be for Krishna's pleasure. And I mentioned yesterday that there was this time lapse in between what she's doing, which takes minutes at the most, and what he's doing, which takes quite a bit of time. And so between what Krishna's doing and what Mother Jashoda is doing, time is working in a different way. Just like, for instance, 100 years of our time and 100 years of the demigod's time is way, way, way different. So for them, 1 year of their time is 10,000 years of our time, or one day. And you just imagine it's sort of like an arc. So it's the same angle everywhere, but the arc gets larger and larger and larger the further out you go. And once you get to Brahmaloka, then it's like a phenomenally long period of time from our point of view. That happens to be just Brahma's one moment. So when he does this, when this Brahma Vimohana Lila takes place, Brahma steals the calves and the cowherd boys, and between him having a second thought, 1 year has gone by over here. And of course, Brahma doesn't necessarily go back there. He's also here. He stays here. It's just that time acts differently on him than it acts on us. And Prabhupada gives the example, just like some insects who have a lifespan of a day or half a day. For them, they're experiencing that as the way we experience our, say, 100 years. Of course, very few people live 100 years nowadays, but I just went to my aunt's birthday, 100th anniversary. But it's rare, but they experience it to that, in the same way. And in the meantime, something else is also going on. Is that, of course, Mother Yashoda, she's aware. I've just left my son over here and he's upset. So when she's in there taking the pot off, she casts a glance back and he's just sitting there. And she's thinking, what a good boy. But he's not sitting there. He's causing chaos throughout the apartment. But still, Lord Krishna's Leela Shakti. So it's the potency which manages under the jurisdiction of Krishna's Yoga Maya, which manages Krishna's Leela, Krishna's pastime. This is a point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, at different places in Krishna's pastimes, he repeats. And the one which I'm thinking of now is during Krishna's rasa dance. And Leela, just like, for instance, we are functioning under our karma, and whatever is happening to us, walk out the door and someone bumps into you, things aren't happening by accident, everything is ordained by fate. So then, of course, that fate is Krishna's will, although it's not directly taking place in that Krishna's organizing everything. It's handed over under the jurisdiction of the material nature, and the material nature fulfills Krishna's will, although Krishna is simultaneously very much aware of what's going on with each and every one of us. And he's aware that we're sitting here. Well, of course, he's just over here behind the curtain. And he's hearing and is aware of what we're doing, what we're thinking. We don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know who you're bumping into or if you're bumping into anybody. So does Krishna know or does Krishna not know? As I mentioned yesterday, Krishna is running away in fear. It's a real experience for him. So the answer is actually Krishna doesn't know. He hands himself over to this Leela Shakti, and what's going to happen? Whatever happens, happens, like for us. Well, let it be. And so for Krishna, Krishna's internal potency knows what it is that Krishna's desire is, and she, they're all feminine in nature, she manages that particular pastime. And also, she has full freedom to make changes in how the pastime unravels. And Krishna's, although Krishna knows and he doesn't know, and maybe we'll talk about that, but for all intents and purposes, for the enjoyment of his pastime, Krishna doesn't know. He doesn't know what's going to happen next. So it's not that Krishna's thinking, I'm going to run from my mother, but anyway, she's not going to hit me with a stick. He doesn't know. He's not convinced that she's not going to. Many of these things that are going on are unprecedented. He's never dared to do things like this at home. And he's never seen his mother so upset. Neither has he ever seen her with a stick in her hand. Maybe she would just do that. So Krishna doesn't know. And that's quite an extraordinary thing. Because generally when we talk about God, we talk about the God who knows everything. But here's a God who... Well, you can't say he doesn't know anything, but he certainly is not aware of just exactly what's going to happen to him. And that's the personality of Godhead, and that brings out that certain level of sweetness that really illuminates Krishna's pastime and Krishna's personality. He's just like us. Just like us, but we're somewhat like him in many ways. So she's looking at him. Oh, he's such a good boy. Just wait here. I'm going to put down his pot and I'm just coming. And she sees, oh, he's just sitting on the floor, and just like children say, he's not sitting on the floor. He's there. He's here, he's there, he's running around, and he puts things down and comes back. So all of these, she then comes back. And when she's come back, he's no longer there. Where does he? Doesn't know. But she sees the mayhem that she didn't see before. It was already there, but she didn't see it. So all of these things are arranged or going on by Yoga Maya. This time lapse is similar to what the gopis experienced in the rasa dance, and not just that rasa dance, but many rasa dances. A whole day of Brahma goes by, 8 billion, four billion. How many years? 8 billion, 400. Anyway, about billions of years are going by. They just experience. We came out here at around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and the sun's about to rise. It's about 5 o'clock. 6 hours went by. The billions of years went by. Only for them, billions of years went by. For everyone else, it was just 6 hours. So finally she takes it off and she turns around and comes back, and she comes to where she is, then she says, "Here I am," and she becomes amazed. She says, what's happened over here? This is a broken pot. Didn't look broken. She looked over there. It was just standing over there. Now all of a sudden, it's broken. And interestingly enough, Mother Yashoda expresses a certain sentiment for her paraphernalia. I mean, often it just looks like an ordinary pot. Nothing's ordinary in this household. Everything is ornamented. It's a clay pot, but at the same time, it's also full of all kinds of precious jewels and golden ornaments and so on. And it's a person. And this person, he saw what was coming when Krishna was about to strike him. All right, whatever Krishna wants, if this is good for his pastime, then I'll break. What the history of the pot is later on, no one knows. Did he get glued back together again, or what happened to him? And but now she's looking, and she sees that churn was actually broken. And she's amazed. This is like something unprecedented. He's never done this before. I heard that he does these things because the ladies would come and they would complain and they would bring him and say, "Your son has done all these things." And Krishna says, "No, it's not true. They're lying. They're making it up. It's their sons who've done it. But because we got into a quarrel with that son, then they're blaming it on me. I was just tagging them along." And ultimately, number one, she's the queen. But more importantly is that these ladies don't want Krishna to stop coming to their houses. He may be making a mess, but they're seeing him. They're seeing his beauty, they hear his voice, and Krishna also swears, by the way. And if you ever hear Brijbasi swear, they can use really foul language. I don't know any of it. Prabhupada Maharaj is very expert. He even makes Brijbasis blush. But they want him to come back because it gives them so much pleasure. A little yogurt. These people are counted. They've got hundreds and thousands. That's just Nanda Maharaj. She's got 900,000 cows, which means she's got an equal number of bulls. So what's a little yogurt to them? And they have nothing else to do anyway. That's what their life is all about. They churn yogurt, and while they're churning, they're singing about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. So it's also part of the Leela. Yes, let's go complain about Mother Yashoda, but actually that just gives us the opportunity to see Krishna's face in this very uncomfortable position. Is his mother finally going to actually take some action? And she says, "All right, I'll tell my husband." And of course, her husband doesn't do anything. But this is unprecedented. And she looks around, and the first thing she's amazed is, he's so clever. Just 3-year-old boy does all of these things, she does all this nonsense, and she looks around and she can start to see his footprints are everywhere. They're from here to the bedroom, and they're back, and they're leading off to somewhere else. And he's such a clever boy, and she takes pride in that. She says, I can't remember who, but he's become a pundit in churn and breaking. And that pundit thing comes back. I can't remember, there's so many references, I can't remember who's saying it, although there may be a end note here, but there isn't. But someone says, Bhadi Yashoda puts her finger to her nose. And like when you're thinking, she puts her finger to her nose. And she's sort of sniffing out the event. And then she says, no, there's an end note, number 2. Let's see, she says it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this. Her gesture of putting her finger to her nose is one of concentration. And she says, all right, you may be a pundit at breaking, churning, but I'm a pundit at catching these butter thieves. So her first reaction is a humorous one. She's, and in fact, that humor is always there. She's enjoying all of these things that Krishna does. But then she remembers, what should I do? And she looks around, so look for him, should I clean up? And while she's meditating like this, she hears a voice in the sky, and Jiva Goswami writes this voice in the sky. What has actually happened? I won't read all the Sanskrit, but there's 2 verses. Just, O queen, this baby honeybee broke a hole at the bottom of a budding lotus flower. Finding only some dripping liquid inside, he became disappointed and went to another lotus, where he found honey. You have displayed skill by having calmed the boiling milk. If you can now also calm your child's anger, your reputation will certainly be praised far and wide. This is celestial voice speaking to Mother Jasoda. And of course, Mother Jasoda smiling even more. Even the celestials are looking at what my son is doing, and they're praising his activities. So, so then she starts to go to track him down, and so then she started, and she follows the footprints. First, she follows the footprints, and she gets angry when she sees he goes in, goes to Almira, and he actually took her key. And that's like her key. And he's going where she keeps all of her jewelry and everything else. And of course, Krishna knows they live together in the same room. And Krishna's seen her do this many, many times. But she got a little upset. He did take my key. And then, of course, if you got the key, then although the footprints are also there, going back, and you know the walls are not like Bhaktivedanta Manor's walls, which are wood. The walls are marble, and very special marble. So all the walls are smeared with yogurt, and of course there's only so much yogurt inside this churn. But Krishna wants to do nonsense, so out of the little yogurt that's on his palm, then comes an unlimited number of yogurt, and he's just smearing it here and there, and skating along the floor, and wherever he wants, obviously more and more yogurt comes. So the whole place, it's as if, you know, it's as if it's like a tavern brawl or something like that. It's like the place is completely covered. It's a complete mess. When the Mother Yashoda comes back, she has to bring many, many of her personal associates and other cleaning ladies to just do a cleanup. And that's what happens. That's what she's doing when Krishna's tied to the mortar. Anyway, she goes in, and when she goes into the storage room, there's no monkeys there. Monkeys can get in, but there's crows. Crows got in. There's a window over there, in the storage room, a small window, and it's small enough for crows to come in. So she goes in, and of course she goes in, and they're all over there eating from all the mess, because Krishna had gone in, and actually, he had a picnic. So when he took it down, he started eating, and it wasn't that he was in a rush. Ultimately, he says, "Cows me." He says, "I'm time." So Krishna, as we discussed before, slowed down time, and with time going very slowly, then he's having a picnic and he's enjoying himself, eating things, and at a certain point. She's right behind, I mentioned, the wall is right there, and she's on the other side. So when she finally hears him say something, "I'm just coming," and remembers it's time to stop taking it easy and to actually leave. But before he leaves, he takes one more pot. It's like the coup de resistance, it's the final, the last thing. And by the way, of course, he also breaks some of the pots. He's already broken one. May as well break some more in the process. So this storeroom, which is a lengthy storeroom, and it's quite big, not too big, because it's only for immediate use. And it's a complete mess. All of her milk products all over the place. There's ghee and yogurt and other things that Krishna could topple over, spice containers and so on. And these crows are in there and they're eating. So when she comes in, it's like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. All of a sudden they just like come at her because they're so scared. You know, what's going on? And she's trying also not to fall because it's like a skating rink. So she's having to walk very, very carefully, because of course she's barefoot. And she starts to put things right, but this is impossible. There's no way she's going to do this on her own. Besides, it's not the priority. The priority is, where is he? And at this point, Mother just sort of decides, "I have to find him." She goes out of the storeroom, and from the storeroom she has to cross the living room, kitchen area, out to a stairway that goes not just up here, but goes down. His footprints are going that way. And someone, I can't remember who, but she starts to tiptoe. So she's tiptoeing, because when you want to catch someone, then you tiptoe. And it becomes another nice meditation that Mother Yashoda is holding, because she's holding up her skirt. And because her sari, we're reading, she's got this saffron yellow sari on. And by the way, she's not wearing jeans. Or a mini skirt. Or any other form of dress. And she starts to tiptoe. So it's a beautiful meditation with Mother Yashoda. She's a little flushed, getting a little angry. At the same time, she's feeling pride in her heart that her son is so clever. She's getting the attention of the devas, of the demigods. And then, but she's thinking, "But I have to catch him." And so she also now getting her intelligence, unlimited intelligence, of how she's going to actually capture her son. And so she starts to tiptoe, and she goes to the top of the stairway. And the stairway goes down. At the top of the stairway there's a little window looking out, and the stairway leads down to a courtyard. This is an outer courtyard. I don't know, Silver Street, I explained sort of the layout. And where there's a storeroom, outside the storeroom there's another anteroom. There's a reception room, and from the reception room you go to the living room, and there's the bedroom. And from the reception room, there's another stair that goes down to the court, where Nanda Maharaj holds court. But this is another, and then from holds court, and then that goes into a larger inner courtyard, a paved inner courtyard, and then there's the gate, and goes up. This is the back exit, and it's also walled. And from this exit, often Mother Yashoda would go, and this is where she would go when she would take bath in the Jamuna. She didn't necessarily take bath in her bathroom, but she would also go down the stairs. And it's in a very nice courtyard with a beautiful garden, and you go through, you go to the garden, and you get out into the thoroughfare. I mean, it's not the M25, but you get out into Gokula village, and she would go down the hill past the Yamalarjun trees. They're on the way down towards Bathinga, where the ladies would bathe. Nanda Maharaj had his own place, it's called Rajgat, and it was where the king would bathe and brush his teeth and so on. And sometimes, even though Krishna is very young, obviously in the summer months when the water is very warm, she would also take Krishna with her and Krishna and bathe Krishna over there, and Krishna would splash around and play in the water and so on. But now she's standing at the top of the stairs, and it's a latticed window, so you can't really see inside, and she looks outside. And she looks outside, and she sees Krishna's down the bottom, and he's sitting on top of this a wooden mortar. This is not the mortar, this is another mortar. There's another mortar that he gets tied to. This is a mortar it's a sort of a public mortar that's used for others who want to come to be able to grind whatever they want to grind, whether it's spices or other things. And it's a wooden mortar, and of course the mortar is like this on the top. So when she looks down, she can't believe what she's seeing. Well, anyway, the mortar is upside down, because in order to keep crows from getting in there and soiling the inside, they keep it upside down. And Krishna's on top of this mortar, and he's sitting on top of this mortar, and of course he's making all kinds of sounds, and he's getting all the monkeys to come. So he's making these clicking sounds. That's how it translates, making clicking sounds and calling the monkeys. And the monkeys come, he's got the churn, and he's starting to feed the monkeys. And Krishna's sitting, he's sitting on the, he's not sitting like me, he's sitting there cross-legged, in yogic asana. Mother Yashoda never seen him sit in this yogic asana. He says, where did he learn to sit like a yogi? He's in a full lotus position. Of course, Krishna's Yogeshwar. He's the one who teaches all of the yoga sciences, what to speak of. He's the source of all the mystic cities. And he's sitting there, and he's calling all of these monkeys, and he's feeding monkeys. And Mother Yashoda says, he looks like a monkey king. He's doing all this nonsense. He's picked the right association, because monkeys are always up to no good, and now my son is also up to no good. And he's getting a following of the monkeys by feeding them. Of course, Madhya Yashoda doesn't know that these monkeys are not ordinary monkeys, and are not ordinary monkeys. And Krishna actually has an obligation to them, because previously they were the monkeys of Lord Ramachandra. They were Ramachandra's monkeys. And after having sacrificed their lives and fought on behalf of Lord Ramachandra, then the Lord gave them the blessing that when I appear in following age at the end of Dwapara, you've got the Mathura, you come there, you don't have to do anything. No more fighting, no more wars, no more Rakshasas. He says, all you have to do is just whatever you can get your hands on, you can eat. So Krishna's feeding them. He's feeding these monkeys. Of course, Madhya Yashoda is not very sympathetic. She's not interested in Ravana. She's not interested in the monkeys of yore. But she sees that Krishna is sitting there, and he calls them, he feeds them, they come up to him, take from his hand, and they go, you know, the way monkeys go, and they go a little further over. To be quite honest, I've never seen monkeys eating yogurt. I don't know if you have. I've seen them eating bananas and anything else they can get their hands on. Step-by-step is. Anyway, Krishna is very well aware that Madhya Yashoda is going to come. Sooner or later, she's coming. Although Krishna is extremely smart, he made one mistake, and that mistake is that he's got his back to the stair and to come down. So he knows she's going to come down, and she's going to be very angry, and she's going to want to catch me. What is going to unveil how that happens, he has no idea. He hasn't got the faintest idea that it's going to be as serious as it actually ends up being. So he's actually nervous, and at this point Krishna starts to become afraid. The pot's getting empty, the monkeys are all over the place making a racket, like they always do, and he knows in the back of his mind, mother's coming. Sooner or later, she's going to look for me, and at a certain point, she's going to find me. So Krishna's heart tells him, you should hide. On the other hand, his mind says, no, I've never hidden from anybody. It's too humiliating for me to actually hide and run away. But then finally, he does decide to do just that. He decides to hide, but he's trying to hide in a different way. He's already in the yogic posture. The yogurt's finished. The monkeys are sitting around enjoying, and they're also enjoying Krishna's company because they're very affectionate towards him. Everyone in Vrindavan is affectionate to him. So Krishna thinks, I'll do like the yogis and I'll disappear. So, anima prapti is that I'll become smaller than the smallest, and I'll just enter into the atom of this, what he's sitting on?
Mortar.
So Krishna closes his eyes and he practices this mystic city of how to become smaller than the smallest. And he'll disappear, and Madhya Yashoda will come out, and there's nowhere around. And Krishna figures, and she'll be very angry. When she can't find me, she'll start to get anxiety. When she gets in too much anxiety, she'll forget all the bad things, and she'll overlook everything, just so that I can come back again, and I'll pop out of the mortar again. And in the meantime, Madhya Yashoda is coming down the stairs. She's still tiptoeing down the stairs. And Krishna does what the yogis do, whatever it is that they do, to become smaller than the smallest. But it doesn't work. He opens his eyes, he's still there. And Krishna tries, he does the meditation, whatever the mantras are that go along with this anima siddhi, but he can't perfect it. Materialistic yogis perfect it, but to speak of transcendentalists, they also can perfect it. But Krishna, here he is, he's the Yogeshwara, and he can't shrink down. It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because Mother Yashoda has a different plan. Her plan is that she's going to catch her son. And her will supersedes his will. So she dominates. Even though she's at a distance, her will, which is actually fueled and motivated by love for Krishna, doesn't allow Krishna to get in a situation where she can't serve him and where she can't correct him. And therefore, although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and, you know, andantarasta paramanuchantarastam, he's within every atom, along with all of the material and spiritual worlds. But now, he can't get into this, he can't become invisible. He can't manifest any potency. He's become impotent. Because he's being dominated, and as we were talking yesterday, he's being dominated by prema, and Mother Yashoda's determination is, I have to catch this rascal. And when I do, he's going to get a lesson he's never going to forget. And he can't overcome that will, he can't overcome that determination. His godhood is not enough. So you have to really have faith in Krishna. That's what I'm talking about, the first nine cantos. You have to have faith in Krishna to come to the stage where you accept the fact that he can't do anything, or here's the supreme potent person who becomes impotent in the presence of his mother, who just thinks he's an ordinary person. Why? Because there's a special type of potency, this special power, Aishwarya, Sasamagra, Virya, Yasha, Shriya, Jnana, these are all extraordinary, but there's something greater than all of these. And that is this prema. And not just some kind of prema, but there's this extraordinary, spontaneous love which puts aside Krishna's divinity and which is so much focused on him as her son. Your son can't go into an atom. Can your son go into an atom? Your sons can't go into an atom. So she couldn't conceive of anything like that because she doesn't relate, she doesn't love her son as someone who goes into the atom, but to speak of create the atom and stick the whole universe inside the atom at the same time. Therefore, can't do it. And Krishna's happy about that. That's what he wants to accomplish. So he can't hide. And she steps outside, quiet, and she knows where he is. So she's in the doorway, and she comes outside the doorway, and she sees him from behind, and the monkeys are sitting there, and he's got his eyes closed. And that's the advantage, that his eyes are closed, he can't see. He's not even paying attention. He's concentrating on what's wrong. Am I chanting Nama Parad, and I'm doing it the wrong way? Is there something wrong with the mantras I'm using? It's supposed to work. And Krishna's bewildered. And remember that although he's not God, but at the same time all godly powers are there in him, and when he wants to call on them, they're there, provided that they're not checked. And someone gives the example, I'm sure you've all done it, when ants are going and you put your hand there, and they have to go around, or they go somewhere else. So it's like that, the progress of Krishna's idea that I'm going to disappear. It's like the movement of an ant. And Mother Yashoda's will is like the hand. You can't go. And so no way you can do it. Instead of just backtrack. And she's come down. And then she looks around. And leaning against the door is Nanda Maharaj's stick, his walking stick. One of his walking sticks. He has many walking sticks. This is a jewel walking stick. And she looks at that stick. And when she touches it, then it sets off sort of tremors, earthquakes and so on. Because here the demigods are watching, and other sages and saints are watching, and they can't believe this. This person is going to threaten God with a stick. Maybe Ravana do something like that. But here is Krishna's mother, and she grabs the stick. So when she grabs the stick, it becomes like a real earth-shattering event. And it's like all of a sudden the demigods hold their breath. So should we intervene? Should we do something? But they don't have any power. They can't intervene. There's nothing that can get in between her and him. And they don't have any type of shakti or any type of potency like that. As I mentioned, Jiva Goswami, when he's talking about who is actually the real parent, Drona Dara can't get